Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com with your hosts, Maureen Hollering, Steve Frampton, Brenda McCoy, and Bobby Marcheso. During the second half of the show, call in to connect for a free psychic reading. Join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening, everybody. My name's Steve Frampton, and you're listening to The Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. I'm very excited about this evening's show. I've got the great honor of interviewing Jessica Murray, and we'll be talking about astrology and the collective consciousness. It's going to be very, very interesting. But before we get started, I'd like to introduce my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you today?
I'm off mute. That's how I'm doing.
It's a good start.
I'm doing okay, Steve. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I am very well. I'm so excited about the show.
I'm excited for you too. I think it's going to be a lovely show and very informative.
Yes.
So I am Maureen, and I work with everybody here at PsychicAccess.com. I'm a intuitive psychic. Know-it-all. I know it all. And I use tarot as my main tool. I'm very well versed. I'm self-taught, and I feel very strongly that tarot is a symbolic record of human experience. And I help people direction. I'm not God. I don't do anything else. And it's up to them. But I love my work. It's what I do. Thank you.
Thank you, Maureen. It was wonderful to have you here. Brenda, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm glad. I'm looking forward to the show too. I love astrology. Astrology was my first love in all the metaphysical stuff.
Well, you've seen American Idol. Well, Jessica is my astrology idol.
Oh, yay! Well, then it makes it even more special tonight.
It does. I'm so excited. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Brenda, can you tell us a little about your work?
Well, I work with all you lovely people at PsychicAccess.com, and I am a predictive psychic. I specialize in dates, times, and places, and I use the crystal ball, the tarot, and the playing cards.
Wonderful. Well, it's great to have you with us as always, Brenda.
Thank you.
Bobby.
Hello. How are you?
Very well. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderfully well. Thank you.
Good. Can you tell us about your work, Bobby?
Yeah, I'm a psychic medium, kind of a teacher of sorts. I love helping people get in touch with their own, not just their abilities, but that place where they can kind of live life, without the stumbling blocks. I don't, to be clear, I don't use my own guides. I use those of my friends and anybody whose other guides I respect, except for my own. So,
good joke. Well, I hope you enjoy the show, Bobby. Jessica's a very interesting lady.
You know how you look at pictures and you can get feelings and impressions from them, and very strong, this one. The force is strong with her.
I always say to friends, Bobby, if they really want to know what's happening in the world, switch off the TV, close the newspaper, and listen to Jessica Murray or read one of her two books. Even better. So I'm going to just give a little bit of background on Jessica before we get started. Jessica is an amazing astrologer, writer, and cultural commentator, and she brings to light the spiritual underpinnings that shape both the personal and collective experience of our time. In her private practice, Jessica draws from her knowledge of many metaphysical traditions to provide her clients with a sense of the big picture. Her readers and students are given an understanding of how they might respond rather than merely reacting to these turbulent times. Jessica trained as a fine artist before graduating in 1973 from Brown University, where she studied Jungian psychology and linguistics. After a few years in a political theatre troupe, Jessica began a study of the symbolic language of archetypes and has been practicing and teaching astrology in San Francisco for 35 years. Now, there are not many websites that I follow religiously, but this is one that I watch all of the time. It's Jessica's, mothersky.com. That's mothersky.com. And you can also check out Jessica's fascinating blogs, her two books that I recommend, Soul Sick Nation and At the Crossroads. And I was saying to Maureen the other day that I read about five books a week, and I have done for a long, long time. And Jessica's two books are literally the most gripping and valuable I've ever had my hands on. Well, Jessica, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to hear you.
You too. I'm so excited, Jessica, to have you on the show. You know, I've told you before, I follow your work very, very closely, and just have a huge amount of respect for you. Well, Jessica, the first thing I want to ask you about is this Uranus-Pluto square that we're all hearing about that's peaking right now, and wanted to ask you to explain that to us a little, please.
Wow. Well, you know, it's got all the astrologers all hopped up, so you can't find any of us who don't think about it all the time. It's really the main event. And perhaps the biggest deal since the mid-60s, which is, you know, we link it in terms of a cycle to what was going on in the mid-60s when there was this huge time of revolt that was really worldwide, rapid reform and intensity. And upheaval. And so what we have now, which is peaking between this 2012 and 2015, are the most intense years, is a meeting of the planet of revolution, that's Uranus, and the planet of breakdown, which is Pluto. And those two represent cosmic forces, which, you know, are in the process of targeting the institutions in our world and the consciousnesses in our world that need it, that need to be shaken up. So I always want to qualify it for people that, you know, it's not just, oh, something to be afraid of, oh, earthquakes are coming, oh, terrible disasters and revolutions. I think one is being asked here to make a leap of faith that is based on the premise that the cosmic forces are only going to target what needs it. You know, nothing is going to break down that still has viability. But if there are, you know, certain industries, you know, the financial industry that was, you know, the first famous, notorious example of the square, if there's corruption in a government or an industry, then we're going to see it. Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely. It really does. I always remember, Jessica, in my reading with you, which I listen to regularly, you said that the planets somehow reflect what needs to occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a kind of a school of astrology that would call itself transpersonal, which is more of the spiritual philosophy behind what we're talking about, which is an assumption that the extreme conditions that humanity is experiencing right now are symptomatic of a situation that needs healing. And that's the reason it's happening. So when we approach these intense events, and 2013 is going to be very intense, we can try, I think, to look at it in a value-neutral way, to not think of it as good or bad, but just about creative disruption so that healing can happen and our complacency can be shaken up in the places where it needs to be shaken up.
Well, Jessica, I want to ask you this question. If the planets reflect what needs to happen, do you feel that if as societies we took greater responsibility for delivering change that needed to occur, that we could avert certain happenings.
Oh, yes. I don't. I'm not the kind of astrologer who believes in prediction. I don't think that anything is fated in that sense.
Okay.
What is fated, if you will, is the intensity of healing that wants to happen and the cosmic lessons that are going to be taught. But what isn't predictable is whether or not we'll learn. So everything depends on what, as you say, the capacity to have our consciousnesses in the right place. And that isn't written in the stars. That's up to us.
So we can take responsibility. And
I would like to say that there's a huge difference that we would all be well to meditate on between responsibility and reactivity. And what we get so often when the mass mind is freaking out is reaction. But the old-fashioned notion of responsibility, which is, of course, no more or less than the ability to respond, has kind of gone out of favor. I talk about this a lot in both of my books, this notion of responsibility, which used to be an earmark of maturity. I say used to be because it's, I believe, a collective value that has changed over the centuries. There's no longer, you know, the sense that one wants to build a character by having self-knowledge and a restrained response to something. There's more reactivity, and the whole word responsibility now has kind of devolved into the idea of blame. We say, oh, I'm not responsible for, you know, the president's drone program, which really is, we're trying to say, it's not my fault. But if we went back to this original idea, the ability to respond, and to respond from our inner being, then we would be in a different place.
It's interesting that you say that because, well, you obviously, I'm British and I live in the US. I love living in the US. It's a great honor to be here. But I see some of the cultural differences. And one of the things that struck me in the presidential campaign was the amount of blame that it's almost as though everything that had ever gone wrong or happened in 4 years was only President Obama's fault. So I'm not trying to be political, but I believe that I'm responsible or we're responsible.
Yes, that's right. I mean, in astrology, it's very explicit, the symbols. You know, the planet Saturn is the symbol of responsibility. And it's also known as karma, which means that I'm aware of the consequences. And the more you take this idea seriously, because we're each born with a Saturn in our chart, which is to say that we each have the potential to evolve through this archetype of responsibility. It's not just given to some people and not to others. But, you know, in our own style, we have the choice to either become responsible or not. And to really take it seriously means that it isn't just actions. It's the notion of being responsible for the energy that you put out in thought and in spirit, as well as in deed. And, you know, you don't hear many people talking about that in the public discussion, as you say, that the whole thing is so rigged and really quite silly that the official narrative has been, you know, it's really much more telling, I think, for what it doesn't say than for what it does say. And everybody's running around acting like little children with this blaming thing, like you say. In astrology, there is a very significant transit called the Saturn return. You probably know about it. And everybody gets it when they're 3 decades old, and then again, 3 decades from then. And it's Saturn. It's the cycle of Saturn, meaning that you are considered an astrological grown-up if you learn that what you put out there has something to do with you, if you learn the lesson of responsibility. And, you know, the whole culture that we live in now, and much of the Western world, too, which copies our American culture and our values, is completely out to lunch on this.
It's fascinating. Well, I want to use an example from your book, Jessica, At the Crossroads, to ask you another question about the Uranus-Pluto square. Because I remember when I started reading your work, thinking, wow, this lady is a world-class astrologer, but I also thought, wow, this lady has a world-class sense of humor.
Good to hear.
I remember I couldn't put the book down, and it was Saturday night. It was about 3 a.m. I was still reading it, and I read your – and you possibly don't remember this because you write a lot, but you made a reference to Piggy Bank, and you said – you were talking about the banking scandals, and you said something to the effect of, well, it brings a whole new meaning to the term piggy bank.
Piggy bankers.
I just love it. I have a note actually on my task list to go through your book and pick out the most striking sentences and things. So I want to ask you about the Occupy Wall Street movement.
Mm-hmm.
Was that part of the Uranus-Pluto square?
Well, astrologers just see that as the quintessential expression of Uranus and Pluto, partly because Uranus is in Aries, which governs activism, not just thinking revolutionary thoughts, but really putting yourself on the line. And Occupy Wall Street was so emphatically about that. People didn't, most of them, have a lot of money, and it wasn't about going through official channels and waiting and having the PAC, the super PAC funds to influence politicians. It was about going downtown and putting your ass on the line, your physical body. And I just, the timing of it was so perfect from the point of view of when the Uranus-Pluto square, which goes in and out of orb, you know, kind of waxes and wanes, when it was peaking. And Pluto really, it won't surprise people who listen to language to hear that Pluto governs plutocracy. But the Occupy Wall Street movement was really the first time anybody said that aloud. The fact that the U.S. is a plutocracy, which literally in the dictionary meaning means that a tiny little group of people controls most of the wealth. And so the Occupy Wall Street movement put that into the national conversation. And as we know, it spread like wildfire across the globe and became international because it touched a nerve. It expressed what the transit was about in the most essential terms.
Well, I want to ask you, Jessica, about 2013, because we know that, as you said, astrologically, it's going to be a challenging and more eventful year. And I've been following very closely the events in the Middle East. I just find it fascinating to look not only at the history of the Middle East, but the dynamics of the Middle East with Iran and Israel, Palestine, Syria, and more. And I want to ask you about energy, because the debate about energy and becoming energy independent was really huge in the presidential election.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask your view about oil and nuclear energy and this sort of transition from the industrial age.
I think 2013 is a turning point with that huge issue. And I want to start with your question about the way the campaign in the USA treated it, which was so... it was interesting from an astrological point of view. It was dreadful from the point of view of truth and campaigning. But what I was interested in was the various faces of Pluto, which is so strong in the sky right now in this transit you're talking about. Pluto governs taboo and unmentionables and kind of there being a subtext, like the elephant in the middle of the room and nobody's identifying it. And there's a taboo energy around oil here in the sense that, I guess the most obvious sense was that in none of the campaigns did any of the politicians mention the big picture about the dependence on oil, that it's a dead end. Everybody knows it. The world is running out of oil. But, you know, instead they talk about gas prices and promising to lower them and all this nonsense, which are really distortions of the truth. Because as you may know, gas prices are a complete political red herring. The domestic drilling has nothing to do with gas prices because it's, you know, it's a world market. It's world output that counts here. The maximum amount of oil that could possibly be recovered through offshore drilling, in other words, is minuscule. And the interesting thing is that they bought it. So much of the electorate went for this drill, baby, drill line, which I think was just unconscionable because every one of those politicians knew that it is sold on the international market. It has nothing to do, the price of gas at the pump has nothing to do with where it's drilled.
And I remember being horrified, Jessica, reading an article only, I think, 3 months ago, something like that, an article about how wonderful it was that the Russians were able to ship fuel through part of the Arctic Circle that's melted, basically, and they can now get much more easily to their fuel to Asia, and that's a good thing. the Arctic's
right.
Melting, great for business.
Right.
It's terrible.
So I think that there is a combination here of deliberate manipulation. You know, Pluto governs propaganda, and since this transit, the propaganda has gotten more blatant, more fevered, you know, with public opinion being really based on a deliberate distortion of truth about the gas and diesel production thing. And then this business of hiding the elephant in the middle of the room, the idea that dependence on oil is an economic dead end, not to mention, as you say, a climate disaster and has everything to do with war, so it's a perennial threat to national security for people who are worried about that angle. And we can't go anywhere with it. So it's a stalling device that, I guess, is there to feed the dinosaurs, the last institutions that are making money off of it, at, you know, while holding the whole world hostage. So many people in the, you know, looking at new ways that we're going to use, what kind of energy we're going to have to use when the oil is gone. When I think of people use the word alternative for it, which is kind of ironic, isn't it? Because it's going to be the norm. And we're just putting it off, trying to research it. We could do it, of course. We could run the world on clean energy sources in 2 weeks, I think, if we put our will to it.
Wow, in 2 weeks?
Well, you know, when you think of the ingenuity that's out there and the fact that these clean energy solutions have been already tried in experimentation for decades now and have been found to work very well, and yet the way the system is structured, the industrial age would die overnight without oil because of the infrastructure. So if we put all the genius, all the scientific know-how to, you know, to unmask the truth that oil is a dead end, if we put all the geniuses of the world and the technological opinion meisters to work, yes, I think it could be done very, very quickly.
Goodness. Well, Jessica, I want to ask you about the media for a moment as well, because I was reading that the ownership of the media over the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years has changed dramatically, and there's been a lot of consolidation, and that concerns me. Mm-hmm. Another cultural observation was when I moved to the States, I would switch the TV off because it, and I know it's a problem all over the world, I'm not picking on the US, but it's like a fog machine. It doesn't seem to give me the clarity of understanding about what's really happening in the world that astrology can provide, or looking at your work, for example. So what are your observations about the media and the correlation between what the way our media functions and the problems that we have in the world, and how that fits with the whole Uranus-Pluto square?
Right. Well, I think this is very distressing, the idea of a poisoned stream of media. And you can see in the chart of the USA the indication that there will be a pollution. This is Pluto, which in the chart of the USA, which is to say the entity that was born, quote-unquote, July 4th, 1776 in Philadelphia, we can do the chart of a group entity and understand something of the group karma from it. This is what I do in my first book, Soul Sick Nation. We can see in there this Pluto opposed to Mercury, which governs the media, and infer from it that there's a lot of experimentation that starts in the American moneyed classes with this deliberate manipulation of public opinion that I was talking about earlier. And it's not, of course, exclusively American, but it's been raised to an art form in the American media. And the consolidation of power, as you say, is very, very troubling. You may know that when television was just a little baby new medium, it was thought of, it was really envisioned by the earliest visionaries as being a public service thing. And then it has morphed into utterly a commercial venture. So the idea of even the news becoming infotainment, and then in a situation like Fox News, which is the most extreme example of this phenomenon, it's just out-and-out propaganda now. So I think that people who are interested in keeping their sanity and, you know, maybe growing their consciousness during times this intense have a really fine line to walk. And there's an interesting transit, Stephen, that's going on this year from Jupiter in Gemini this spring, right now. Between Jupiter in Gemini and the Pisces planets, it's a symbolic representation of the exact fine line we're talking about, which is between being open to what's going on in the world, not shutting down, not running under the bed to hide, between that, staying self-informed, and then on the other hand, being overwhelmed by how toxic it is. I don't have a television. Like you say, you just want to shut it off when you realize the mendacity that's going on and the lack of clean information. But this fine line is part of our responsibility, I think, as not just citizens, but human beings who are alive during these times. Because we're children of our era as much as we're children of a country. And I think our responsibility has to do with finding clean streams of media and keeping open to them, not shutting down.
Yeah, and it seems to me that there's this theme of purity, purity of purpose, purity of fuel, of information. The word purity just comes to mind. Now, I know, Jessica, that traditionally we consider Neptune to be the ruler of oil, but your view is that Pluto actually rules oil. So I want to ask you, you were explaining about the US natal charts going back to the 1700s, and you mentioned the Saturn return phenomena earlier. The US is going to have a Pluto return. So I'm intrigued to ask you about that, because for me that's just, it's huge, and it somehow feels intertwined with this whole theme of oil and fuel and need for purity.
Right. Because the whole notion of Pluto is lack of purity. And of course in nature there are forms of Plutonian devolution that are utterly organic. It just governs decay. So Pluto is the process that's working on the moldy orange in your fruit basket that's part of nature. It just breaks it down so it can turn into a whole new form. But in the human realm, Plutonian decay takes the form very often of corruption. And the kind of pollution that we are steeped in now. Although the good news is that with Uranus squaring Pluto, there is a very steep learning curve. Flashes of insight are hitting a lot of people at once about the nature of corruption. So we're waking up to the presence of this decay and corruption, and that's actually the good news. But it's certainly in our face. And, you know, one of the examples of this Plutonian corruption is, we were talking about earlier, this unmentionability of oil, the real truth behind the oil wars, you know, the role that oil has played in these hideous, unnecessary, toxic wars that the U.S. Pentagon has been waging. So that is a more Plutonian exercise than anyone is willing to admit. The whole notion of an oil war, you know, Stephen, we didn't have this in earlier generations. This is a new peculiarity of our age. So as you say, the intertwinement of oil, this addiction we've developed in the machine age to this one black goop, which is interesting. It's made of decay, right? So it's Plutonian through and through. There's so many levels of the Pluto symbolism in it. And the other is the propaganda that we talked about. Pluto governs that, too. And then there's nuclear energy, which is a very dicey topic, I think. It's, you know, Uranus is uranium, of course. Pluto is plutonium. And nuclear energy is being discussed in a whole new heated way now that Pluto and Uranus are dominating the transits. You remember that dreadful quake tsunami that happened in Japan. That happened the very day that Uranus hit the Aries point.
It's incredible, isn't it? It's like, I was think of astrology, Jessica, as it's like watching a clock, the hands of a clock moving
That's
around
right.
and ticking into place. It's just mind-blowing.
It really is. That's exactly what it is, and no more than that either. People, you know, have the mistaken idea, I think, that the planets make something happen. But what it's really going on is, just as you say, that they're just a clock. They just show us what time it is.
If we're conscious.
Right. You know, it's like the full moon is a bright light, literally and figuratively. So that is such a good example, the lunar cycle, because everybody is aware of it, and we can see more blatantly how it's a clock, and how in the new moon, which is what we're just going into now, this month, tomorrow, Saturday night, we have the beginning of a cycle, and then 2 weeks later we have the culmination of the cycle when everything is lit up. And the symbolic way that it's lit up means that things come to a head and we can see. So the potential for consciousness is very high at the full moon.
And now Neptune is in Pisces.
I
remember reading that in the 1800s, Neptune was in Pisces. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jessica, but my understanding is that when we had this huge explosion of spiritualism and psychic phenomena, seances, that was when Neptune was in Pisces. And here we are again, Neptune in Pisces.
Yeah, that's right. It only happens once every 168 years, and it's a very big deal. And you may also know that we've got all these planets in water, not just Neptune.
You read my mind. I was going to say to you, aren't there something like 6 or 7 planets in Pisces?
There's going to be a lot of planets right now. We have Saturn in the North Node in Scorpio. And from middle of this month through the middle of next month, we're going to have half of the solar system's going to be in Pisces, 5 out of 10 planets. And then in July, Jupiter will go into Cancer, which is the third water sign.
Well,
so
Jessica,
everything
we're going...
about the importance of water is up. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Well, I wanted to say to you, Jessica, we're going to take a very short commercial break, but mm-hmm. after that, I would like to ask you about this whole theme of Pisces and what it means for people that have a lot of Piscean energy just after this short break.
Okay.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing, and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com.
Well, Jessica, welcome back after the break. I wanted to ask you more, Jessica, about this theme of water, because as you said, Pisces is a water sign. There are a large number of planets in Pisces. What does this mean for people that have a lot of Piscean energy in their personal charts or psyches?
Well, they could be in their glory. You know, it depends, as always, on how we use what we have, but the potential is for people who are already sensitive to water and who kind of run that energy as their native state to deepen their understanding of what makes them tick. Because it's as if the outer environment now is supporting, especially strongly, who they are inside. And this is an important point because water, of all the four elements, is the one that's least understood, I think, in the modern world. Because of, the way that humanity in our times is kind of skeptical about things that they can't see, to the point of, you know, not having a clue about such things as psychic impact, and even the emotional realm is given short shrift. So it becomes very important to make use of a period like 2013, where especially this spring, February and March, when there's so much Pisces affecting everybody, and the people who already are used to water, it's a familiar place for them to be, emotional sensitivity and psychic receptivity, can, I would hope, feel more validated. They're the ones who have something to teach the rest of us.
Yeah, not on this theme of purity and sensitivity. Mm-hmm. Sensitive to the planet, sensitive to resources, sensitive to each other, sensitive to integrity.
Mm-hmm. You know, the whole emotional realm, it's kind of nice to see psychologists finally talking in terms of emotional intelligence. I don't know if you've noticed that, but when I was learning psychology, you know, years ago, nobody talked about emotional intelligence. Intelligence was strictly speaking a mental phenomenon. And in astrology, we would say it was given over to air. Air is pure cognitive thought. But these days, you know, for them to concede officially that there could be such a thing as emotional intelligence is the kind of thinking and awareness, I think, that people are getting more and more hip to. They're getting more and more hip to what water is. And you know, it's happening physically. On the physical level, people are going to be, I think, all year, more sensitized to the pollution of our waterways, and the scarcity of clean drinking water, mm-hmm. and all these really unprecedented crises that are happening because of global warming, such as rising sea levels. You know, this is not something that human beings are already equipped to deal with. We have to dig inside of ourselves and come up with a response.
Well, I want to ask you, Jessica, on this subject of purity, mm-hmm. about some of the dreadful events we've seen in the US, the shootings we've seen. And my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that Uranus does govern shootings. Is that correct?
Did you say Uranus?
Yes.
It's all really shocking, sudden events.
Okay.
So anything that shocks the pants off of the public, you know, we expect to see it during the square, yeah.
But you see, we see these events on the television and in the media, and for me, it's like a canary dying in a mine. They are signs that something is seriously wrong. So I want to ask you about the people who are losing control of themselves, of their emotions, but I also want to ask you about, mm-hmm. again, about purity and integrity, but particularly regarding the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, a drug thing is very, very interesting, you know, on so many levels. You know that Neptune governs drugs. It governs illegal drugs, and it governs the legal drugs, which it also governs the informal way that we drug ourselves, and the fog machine, such a great image that you mentioned, that television serves the purpose of fogging us in.
Neptune keep us governs, numb, keep us dead.
Yeah, numb us out. Neptune governs literal fog, and it governs all the drugs, and it governs the idea of staggering around in a numbed-out state. But, you know, Neptune is the governor of Pisces. So the fine line between using Neptune that way and using it as a sensitivity, an advocate for more sensitivity to the point of spiritual sensitivity, that fine line is something that all of us are going to be walking during this Piscean period, meaning that we're being challenged to get into the higher vibration of Neptune and to avoid, like the plague, the lower expression of Neptune. Very difficult to do. It's the same planet. Neptune in Pisces is in its strongest placement it could ever be in. And all the other Pisces planets are supporting it, making this one archetype really dominant. And it's going to force each of us in our own way, depending on what we've got going on in our charts, to either move into the emotional sophistication we were talking about earlier, whereby your own personal feelings start to merge with understandings that are not just personal, but universal. So that's why it supports spiritual understanding. Between that and the kind of lowest common denominator version of Neptune, which is the escapism, which is just rampant. I mean, if it's not alcohol and prescription drugs, it's sleep and depression too. It's governed by Neptune too, because it's a kind of a shutting down out of overwhelm. And overeating and, you know, self-medication. I think that what's happened, you know, since I wrote my first book and I looked at this question to now, 6 years, 7 years later, self-medication like this has become normative.
Mm-hmm.
It was the exception before. Now it's the rule in the USA and Europe. You know, I just read that a quarter of American women age 40 to 59 take antidepressants.
Well, one of the things that shocked me when I moved to the States, and I could say lots of things that shock me about the UK and other countries. I'm not picking on the US, but one of the things that shocked me about the US is that everybody knows the brand names and refers to the brand names of certain drugs. And people would say, "Oh, would you maybe you should have some Lunesta?" Or and I was like, "Well, what is Lunesta?" And it just shocked me that everybody's like part of the language. Everyone knows the name of the drugs.
Certainly tells us, I mean, it's a sign of how much money goes into the advertising.
Mm-hmm. That's
these
true.
Beautiful,
that's true.
Glossy ads that you see, you know that no expense was spared to present those high-priced pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, well, but Jessica,
go ahead.
Sorry.
No, you
I didn't
go.
Mean to interrupt you. I was just excited because we talked about piggy bank, and I want to ask you then if I would like to see the pharmaceutical industry come under the spotlight and held accountable.
Yeah.
But my question for you is, as we see all of these planets moving into Pisces, will we be talking about piggy prescription? Do you feel that that's the next scandal to break?
I do. I have been sniffing this out for a while now because, you know, the Pluto effect is to flush out of hiding these plutocratic processes that have been undercover in our society. And of any industry, pharmaceuticals is one of the most plutocratic in the sense that they have the highest profit margin, I think, per unit of product. You know, if you think of a tiny little pill that costs pennies to produce, a fraction of a penny to produce and then sells for whatever they can get away with. So big pharma is really kind of epitomizes the rapacious greed of the big guys, the industries that are kind of the foundation of our plutocracy. And there's an interesting symbiotic relationship, you know, that is never talked about in the official narrative between illegal drugs and legal drugs. I think that this is going to become more and more talked about. I think Pisces is going to stimulate controversy here because it's a kind of an unconscious theme floating around in the mass mind. And there's going to be a lot of reactivity, and idiots are going to be blathering on about nonsense. But there's also going to be some pointed questions asked, like you suggest. For example, the notion that the war on drugs, so-called, is not working. It's been a complete failure. It's cost trillions and trillions of dollars, right? This war on drugs and the wiping out of marijuana crops in Mendocino County. Meanwhile, there are geopolitical aspects which are staggeringly important to consider to the whole global economy, like the trafficking and selling of illegal drugs, which I think is probably the most stunning financial success story of our era. It's thought to be, what, $400 billion a year industry. And then, you know, there's so many interesting things about this that people will start to ask if they just follow the dots and keep looking. They will find, you know, that it's not a new idea, but I think it'll be talked about more and more, that the violent sales networks, you know, for the drugs that are destroying Mexico. And, you know, civilization as we know it in Latin America is really hanging in the balance from these networks. But they exist to satisfy demand up north.
And yeah,
the USA,
well, I find it fascinating to
civilized
reflect upon Greece and Latin America. So we know about the Mayans and Peru, all these wonderful civilizations and monuments in Latin America, and then we know about the heritage of Greece, and I find it just so symbolic that Greece is the country in Europe that's been collapsing economically,
right.
Or collapsing the most.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is.
Right. And this notion of civilization, too, that you bring up, Stephen, the sign Capricorn in astrology is associated with this whole notion of civilization. And, you know, Pluto is in Capricorn. Since 2008, the planet of complete breakdown and renewal, which only happens every 2.5 centuries, is in the sign of civilization. So it's not just that these different crises are happening in these different countries. From the big picture point of view, it's the whole concept of civilization, which is crumbling in the group mind. And by that I mean that our definition of what is civilized is what's transforming. So I think that that's the astrologer's answer for why it had to be Greece.
It's just...
You see what I mean?
Nothing's
it epitomizes something, and that something is going through a sea change.
Yeah. Well, Jessica, I want to ask you about children. You know, I'm blown away by the accuracy of astrology, and I love hearing what you have to say. And I think about natal charts and individuals and the fact that children being born are coming into a very different world, but they're coming into in with very different charts.
Right.
What do the charts of children being born now tell us about where we are and maybe where we need to go?
Well, as an old fogey, I am in an interesting position to comment on such a thing as, for example, there's a new term that's been coined, cyber natives. You know, this isn't the infants, but little babies that have been born since 1993 is when astrology pegs the milestone, because it was when Uranus conjuncted Neptune in the sky. And we see that as kind of the inauguration of the era of when computers became not just a peculiarity and a side issue anymore, but became absolutely central to public life. And so children born since then, and even more children born since the Uranus-Pluto square within the post-cyber era, I believe that they're neurologically wired differently. And many people talk about this, especially geezers like me, that the young people, it's not just that they know how to work these things. We always have to ask them when our machines break down, and they always know. It's not just that they know the skills. It's that their minds are wired differently.
Well, Jessica, you read my mind completely, because the question I wanted to ask you is just that. I was going to say to you, do technological developments change the way we function internally as well as what we're doing externally?
Well, I think that the neurologists are just beginning to look into this. They tell you that the brains of people who grew up in a cyber world are wired differently. But we can see sociologically the huge changes, just the way of raising a generation of babies who, well, this is a pet peeve, so. But as an example, the number of mothers who are pushing and fathers who are pushing their baby carriages down the street and they're yakking on a cell phone. And you know, there's this kind of lack of ambient awareness that goes on when in a world where the cell phone has sort of broken down the division between private space and public space. You know, it's become permissible and completely normative to have a loud conversation on the bus on your cell phone. So a lot of different changes have happened. And when I think of a child growing up in that kind of with that kind of a parental relationship where the prioritization of this disembodied voice on the phone instead of pointing out to your child all the little things about the walk you're taking together. It makes me very sad.
Well, being, again, it's the theme of purity of presence and
right.
being conscious. Well, Jessica, we're almost out of time, and I could speak to you forever, but I want to ask you, for our listeners, where, when, and how do they find out more about your work and what you're going to be doing this year?
Well, you know, my website is the headquarters, mothersky.com, M-O-T-H-E-R-S-K-Y, no space. And I write a blog about the key things that are going on in the world, a monthly blog about the things which grab the headlines, and we try to talk about the meaning behind them, the, you know, the larger picture of what they mean. And I also have a Sky Watch every month that people can subscribe to, and that talks about what transits are going on and how they might affect our natal charts. And I also have a lecture series. There's just no dearth of information out there.
It's wonderful. Well, Jessica, I don't know how to thank you enough. I want to say to you, and I mean this very genuinely, you're one of the people, one of the very few people that have really woken me up.
Oh,
and I know that you're waking a lot
honor.
Of people up and having a big influence. So I want to thank you for that and thank you for being with us.
Thank you so very much, Stephen.
And keep up the good work. We love it. Can't get
it's
enough
all
of
right.
it.
Back okay. at you.
Thank you, Jessica. How incredible was that?
I really enjoyed her quite. I loved her energy, the way she articulated well and discussed and everything. She's something else. She's special.
Yeah. Very, she's very, very special. Very special. Very special.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Well, for everybody that would like more information about Jessica, remember, as well as her website, mothersky.com, there's a profile for Jessica on the psychicaccesstalkradio.com website. And you know that the radio show is archived and available on iTunes, etc. I want to take just a moment to make some announcements. Stay tuned for the second part of the show to get your free reading on air with our gifted psychics. And we'll announce the call-in number a little later on. So get your pen and paper ready. And if you missed our show last week, you'll find the archive link as well as all of our previous shows at psychicaccesstalkradio.com. Just hit the archives tab and they're all listed there. And there's a lot of really good information and material on there now. So please do check it out. And also circulate those links and future show details to your friends and family. We want to connect with as many people as possible and get really great information out there, like the wonderful, incredibly professional information that Jessica gave us this evening. Please do visit our website, psychicbloggers.com, to learn about everything from the paranormal to reincarnation and the how-tos of psychic development. And if you're interested in getting a reading from the best professional psychics on the internet, go to psychicaccess.com. You'll find that each psychic is verified, accuracy tested, and they offer unique gifts. They also each have their own detailed profile for you to read about them and their work and select who you feel can really help you. And they really are authentic, gifted psychics. And it's a great honor to work with them and the hosts of this show, and Doug as well, who keeps us on the right track with high expectations. Now, all of the co-hosts on the show are available at Psychic Access. If you want a personal reading from one of us, please just do come to psychicaccess.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you have your own website, remember that you can earn 50 cents a minute on readings that are referred through your website to psychicaccess.com. And if you would like to check out that offer, go to psychicaccess.com/webmasters. If you like our show, please invite your friends to join us. Come to the chat room. Listen into the psychic viewpoint. There's a lot going on. Please spread the word. And we really appreciate it. Now, we're going to that part of the show during which the co-hosts banter and talk about the interview. So I'm sure that will be great. But I'll give you the telephone number for our call-in readings for you to use a little later on. It's 724-444-4851. That's 724-444-4851. 1-800-444-4851. I do want to remind you that when you call in, please have one question. We need to get through the calls, so we're just able to answer one question for each caller. But we look forward to speaking with you and helping you. Brenda, I know you said your first love in the metaphysics was astrology. So what did you think about that wonderful interview?
I was pretty, you know, it was pretty spot on. I really liked what she said about Pisces and Pluto. And it really hits home because it's so easy in this cyber age to escape and to not deal straight on with people. Even in the realm of relationships and love, with all this cyber dating, and you know, you never really know who the person is, but there's people who fall in love, they get engaged over texting and you know, chatting. It's a way to conceal your inner thoughts. It's a way to not have to face up to or be responsible, you know. And I feel it's a, you know, it's like the fish just swimming around and kind of going to the bottom and ignoring, and you know, I think that's a big reason why we're.
I always laugh, Brenda, about the goldfish, because I remember having a goldfish and when I was a kid, and it used to swim past the little bridge, and I was reading about how the goldfish doesn't have much of a memory, and I was sitting there thinking, every time it goes past the bridge, it must think, oh, there's an interesting bridge, and then doing it again, there's an interesting bridge. it's the theme of being conscious, isn't it, again?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's really interesting because Pisces is, you know, the most deeply psychic of all signs. But they're also the one that's also the sign in which, you know, you can really build a fantasy. You can really escape. You can really put your head in the sand. And I think that's a big reason why we're having all these disasters and all these things happening, you know, to people. The violent acts, it's like, wake up. Hello, wake up.
Yeah, Neptune, which rules Pisces, is the archetype of vision, amongst other things. So it's almost reflective of the fact that we need to create a new vision. The things are not all working as they should.
It's on every level. It's on every level that you look out there now. Every single level. You can start from the top down or the bottom up. But it all needs, and that's probably why there's, you know, she was talking a lot about, you know, the decay, and well, the decay has to happen for the new to be born.
Yes. Yeah, for us to create space.
Rebirth. It's about rebirthing. You can't fight it. You can't fight it. It's a cycle you cannot fight. So.
Well, thank you, Brenda. Bobby, what's your view about changes required?
Well, there's so there. If you look at the different branches, there's a lot of changes, obviously, that need to be made in this world. But I'm a big proponent or a big believer in, if you just simply change consciousness, you'll be on the right vibration where all of the changes come automatic. So I know, like, as a just a simple reference, a lot of people, when they're trying the law of attraction, want to change the way they say things, right? I just don't think this will work out. Okay, wait a minute, that's not how to say it. I hope it'll work out, and I allow myself to work at it, right? They'll change their vocabulary thinking that will do it, right? It'll get them on the right vibration, and it can, but you have to say it, you know, 100 times for it to really start to change your energy. But what I find is that if you're in the right place to start off with, your vocabulary automatically changes. Do you see what I mean? You don't have to change your words automatically change, as does your world and situations and such. And if we just started getting a little bit more conscious, I know we're supposed to be love and light, and we're really supposed to help open up the world and we certainly have our places, and when I'm doing my workshops and I'm all about that, but I have to tell you, I'm so disgusted and can feel it to such a huge degree when I'm out here in California, especially when I'm driving, and it could be pedestrians or it could be other people in cars who are just like you. You know, I know you were talking about the fish and its memory in the fishbowl, which is very funny, by the way. But we're all in our own little fish bowls, and nobody else exists. Nobody, they have no consciousness of another person. Or I've been right behind people. I can't even tell you right behind them, where they just walk into a door and they don't hold the door open. Something simple. They just walk in like they're the only ones in the world. And I mean, I come from the Midwest, and I think that a lot of Midwest people are just much nicer and more conscious. They're some of the cities are starting to lose that. But it's just something simple. You know, a car stops. When we're walking across the crosswalk, I was taught that a car can kill you. So when you're in the middle of a crosswalk, I kind of jog across, you know. These people, like she was saying, just take their time. They're looking at their cell phones. Even though they know you're sitting there waiting with a big old vehicle, they just, again, it's their world. And it really irks me, I guess. You know what I mean? I'm very passionate about that. So many changes need to be made, but it starts with being conscious. And if there's planets and stars and things that you can get in touch with that help you do that or predict that, I'm all for it.
Good stuff. Well, thank you, Bobby. Maureen.
Yes,
talk I have to something. Me. I know you've got lots of thoughts.
Well, you know, what I really want to share is that what she was saying in the latter part of the, right, you know, then part of her interview, that about, you know, the people, young kids, young people, and so on. And, you know, and I bring up my daughter a lot because I am very proud of her, like all parents are proud of their daughters, but, or in their sons. But Mariah is, I'm really happy that she's going this direction, but she just spoke to me recently about this, and she's going to be graduating from UCSD, which is a pretty major university in California here, and she's a neuroscience major. And your guest had brought up the neurologist. She brought up that, and my daughter's decided she wants, through all this, she wasn't clear, but she's graduating. After 4 years, she wants to go off into, you know, then to graduate school. She wants to then master's and all that. But she found at Columbia University, it's the only, at this time, it's going to change because this is the big changes that are coming on for people in the field that she wants, what Mariah wants to do. She studies the brain, but she decides she wants to help people. So at Columbia University in New York City, they're only one that now is offering this for a graduate program degree is mindfulness degree, working into the psychotherapy, you know, where this is going to be soon, one day everybody will be getting involved in this, because this is exactly where we're heading, because then you'll get away from a lot of the, well, there's a lot of meditation instead of, you know, going, sending them off to psychiatrists, the psychologist will work with them and they'll heavily medicate people. So my daughter's generation is going to be making quite a difference, I think, in every which way. And I think this is what I really was, you know, when she's bringing this up, it was really, you know, I really was reflecting on my daughter, what she's going to be doing. She's going to be making a big difference. And plus she's going to be moving to New York, which I can't help, you know, having, looking forward to going to New York as well. And she's off to wherever, Thailand for 5 months, and right after she graduates in June for 5 months to do some work.
Wow, are you going to go to Thailand?
For 5 months, yeah, I'm going to miss her. Yeah, she's all.
But are you going to go and see her?
Now, maybe if I can do that, I'll even do that, but yeah.
Oh, you should, because I'm sure there's a lot to explore in terms of spirituality and consciousness there.
And she's going to be there, and it's part of her mission and vision is going to be helpful for her work. That's why she's doing it. She's not like she's just going there to have fun. She's going there to do some, she's going to be doing some yoga, no talking, for, you know, doing that kind of stuff and teaching English as well to make some money. But so I'm really proud of her. And this is her generation. You know, that's the generation that's really going to, you know, start helping, especially the people that are, you know, like I said, doing a lot of, and I'm one of those people that have been medicated all my life. But, you know, so I think, yeah. So your guest was lovely. It was a very, very lovely, calming interview.
She's incredible. Yeah. And I meant what I said, that she really is one of the people that's woken me up. And I learn every time I read Jessica's material. And that book, I've read both of her books. The one I read recently was At the Crossroads. It is one of the best reads ever. If you want to know what's really happening in the world, look at that book.
Yeah, I will. I will check that out. Definitely. She's in her I liked her way. Her way. Definitely.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Well, Brenda, how do you still use astrology, Brenda?
I use astrology in everything I do. As a matter of fact, in my monthly newsletter that I send out called The Moon Messenger, I do it for the full moon of every month and the full moon energy per each sign for the month. And all of my work, I use it. I mean, I don't always do, like, I'll have clients that sometimes occasionally, you know, they want to know what's going on in their lives, and I just tell them to shoot their chart over, or I put their chart. I just take a look at it. I've been doing it a long time. I'm not an astrologer, though, because I believe that an astrologer is your course of study, and it's very specific. You know, as a psychic, I'm pretty well versed in astrology because I've studied it, you know, practically all my life, but I don't consider myself an astrologer per se, you know, because that's, you know, that it's, there's just so many depths to astrology, you know what I mean?
So, oh, it's just a never-ending journey.
It's like a never-ending, yeah.
Metaphysics and spirituality, period, never-ending.
But I believe that if you get to know, you know, astrology, and you are familiar with, you know, the different planets, the different elements, the different modalities, the aspects, the houses. If you're familiar with all of that, then you can really help your clients. You know, if they send you their chart or you have get a hold of their chart, you know, you can just almost just look at it and be able to see patterns in it just from, you know, being familiar with astrology, because it is a science. I believe that astrology is definitely one of the sacred sciences.
I do. I'm a massive, massive fan. And it's interesting because I began with mediumship and just intuitive work. And I wanted to ask you, Brenda, and Maureen in a moment, about my fascination for the way in which the metaphysical systems are correlated. So we talk about Saturn as, well, in traditionally we speak of Saturn as the major malefic. In other words, it's the more troublesome planet. But as Jessica said, we shouldn't necessarily judge things as good or bad because Saturn calls for restructuring. But I know from my observations of people's charts that very challenging progressed aspects to Saturn can be really tough. Really tough.
Well, it's the great teacher. It is the great teacher, you know.
The teacher, yeah.
It can be a very dark place to be.
It can be dark, but you know, it's just like Steve said. I mean, it's like if you think of Saturn, you think of the Tower card, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. Definitely, it's necessary.
And it's necessary. It's definitely necessary.
Isn't it I think Saturn maps to the the devil, and Mars, which is the planet of activity or action, aggressiveness, and downfall, is the tower.
But the tower, though, there's a downfall, but with the downfall is the creating the new foundations. And I think that Saturn is very much about that. I mean, I have Saturn in Sagittarius, so I'm very much thinking that, you know.
I have a Capricorn, which is one of the
you have it in the rule. See, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's very tough. In a really high house, 11th house.
Yeah, and
it's really.
Where's your Saturn, Steve?
My Saturn's in Cancer in the 10th.
Ah, that's lessons in love. Those are the hard lessons in love.
For nothing but that.
And Bobby.
But you know what, though? You know, the because it's cyclic. You know, it'll probably go along with Saturn returns. Let's hope it's not with your next Saturn return.
I tell you though, I honestly have got to the stage where I've let go of all my low self-esteem, and I've still got my issues in life. We all have. We're learning forevermore. But I've got to the stage where honestly, I feel good about myself and good with myself. And I get worried when I speak to a client that is obsessively focused upon finding the relationship, because it makes me feel they don't have the right relationship with themselves. And I don't believe we manifest or magnetize the right relationship until we have the right relationship with ourselves.
Well, that's
master
true.
Ourselves.
And everybody's timing is different. Everybody's timing is different, and that you cannot be in a hurry about this. You do a certain amount of this is tied to destiny. And, you know, of course our free will plays a big part too, but we, you know, in knowing ourselves, we know when to act on these signs that we see around us so that we can bring love into our lives. I mean, I'll take my, for example, I'm married very late. I married at, I was 36 when I got married, because I realized at the time that I wasn't really ready. And when I decided within myself that this is what I really want, then I pulled out all the stops to send that attraction energy out there into the universe. And I think that, you know, so the universe would know that I'm available. And I think that that's something people have to understand. You have to be ready.
Yeah, and let go.
You have to let go. You have to be ready. You have to be ready to be able to share, to compromise. Because, you know, marriage
That's where
is
I got.
No
that's
picnic.
Why I remember, though, Brenda, having a reading with. Do you remember we had, do you remember we had Christopher Gibson on the show?
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about astrology, and he's going to do in the spring a great show for us on Hermetic Tarot, which you guys will love.
Oh, and that's going to be good.
I remember him talking to me about my chart and my life and relationships. And he said, you know, Steve, you're the kind of guy that really takes the attitude of, I want to be with you, but I don't want any of your shit in my house.
Well, then you're not going to find anybody, honey.
Yeah, I know. I've got to get over that. He said, you know, and he laughed and he said, so, you know, so for example, if they've got an old wagon wheel table, they're doomed with you.
Or one made out of a tree stump.
Yeah, he's so funny, so funny. Okay, and he also said, you know, you might want to consider having two homes on a big plot of land with a corridor that goes in between.
Ah, oh, that's so funny, because people do that. Like Al Pacino did that with who was he married to, Maureen? You know, who he's got twins with, the woman who played with Chevy Chase in all those movies. What was her name? Beverly D'Angelo. They have separate houses because they can't live together.
Yeah, I think that's what I'll have to do with her.
That's funny.
I want to have with a zip wire so I can zip wire off my balcony, off my house, over to the other house.
Like James Bond.
Yeah, and I want to have my office in a tree. I want my office to be built in a tree. Treehouse office. But anyway, on the subject of treehouse office, Bobby, I want to ask you about destiny. What's your view on destiny and the extent to which life is fatalistic or determined by our free will?
Well, I think some people are just programmed.
Have you got a wagon wheel table?
Have I got what?
A wagon wheel table.
I don't, but I have a spittoon and an outhouse. Does that count? Or?
Spittoon, that's good school. But anyway, talk to us about fatalism versus free will.
Well, I don't know about verses, but again, I think some people are designed or programmed to be a certain way in life. In other words, there are some people, and this is just what I've come to understand. There's some people who are more likely to go out and rob banks, and most of us who, you know, are here don't. I think that there are some people who, as I've seen from serial killers and such like that, that they just are that way. Now, that doesn't mean, because what I also believe is that, let's say, Jeffrey Dahmer at any point became more conscious and less identified with the behavior, that he could have said, whoa, something's not right here. I want to be a better person. I want to change this, or what have you. And then he could have. You see what I mean? So I still think that we have control, but those who don't wish to control it and do simply just go along by fate and just let their thoughts control whatever, then there's a destiny. They're going to, certain things are going to happen. You're fated or destined to be a certain way if you're not going to change it. And yet I think that we all come down here with a particular design. Do you see what I mean? So I think overrules all is your thinking and wanting to change a thing can. I think that you can absolutely be whoever it is that you want to be, regardless of whatever they say. I come from, you know, alcoholic parents and a broken home, yet I wasn't fated to do all of that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't smoke and I don't drink, and yet I've had plenty of opportunity. And now I know why, because of doing what I do, that I didn't pollute my body with that. But I certainly could have. But it wasn't a choice to, I'm not going to drink because I'm going to be psychic. You know what I mean? I was taken care of, I believe. So it gets all pretty entwined, doesn't it?
It does.
I think it's tough to separate the two. And yet there's an understanding of knowing that you can change what you want. But at the same time, I think that some people are just programmed, you know, if you're worried about, gosh, what if I do evil? Well, you probably aren't going to do evil if you're having those kinds of thoughts. You know what I mean? You're less likely to do that. I think some of the people that do what they do don't know what they do. Robbing banks or something, or killing people, hurting people, the people who are in jails. They're just designed, I think, to kind of be like that. They don't understand what they're doing.
You know what? Oh, I'm echoing. Sorry, guys. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Bobby, but there was a movie. God, what was it called? Denzel Washington and the guy, what's his name on Roseanne? That was on Roseanne. Whatever. Might be time for a caller. Never mind. I'll talk about it later.
I'll ask you about it after the calls, Maureen, so remember that thought. I think his name was Dan, but I'm not sure the name of the actor. It was John Goodman.
Exactly. I'll talk, yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it. I'll make a note to ask you about John Goodman. Okay, well, we're going to take our first call from New York, and this one is for you, Brenda.
Hi, New York. Good evening. I'm all right. What can I do for you this evening? What you need to know? Okay, let's take a peek. Well, you're not happy with what's happening, but really, you know, right now there's a lot of buildup on this. I mean, there's an awful lot of buildup about these changes, and yes, some of them are emotional and it could be negative, but I'm also seeing it's not the right time financially to take that leap. If you really can't stand it, and it becomes unbearable, there's a window of opportunity for you at the end of 3 months. It feels like, strangely enough, through this change, a man is going to, you know, offer you an opening or an opportunity actually in the same job that you have. So it's not completely hopeless. It just looks like, you know, you're feeling out of control, but that's not going to last. Yeah, it's a bit, you know, it's a change. But once the dust settles on this, I really do feel that, you know what, you could hang until the right opportunity. It's meant to be, and I keep seeing 3 months, 3 months, 3 months. This job is meant to be a stepping stone to something bigger, whether it's a promotion where you are or another job. But there is going to be an opportunity at the end of 3 months, so I'm getting to hang tight right now.
Okay, so I'll be okay, basically. You think I would adjust fine to these changes, and in 3 months it'll be
yes,
another job?
Is that what you're saying? Yes,
okay.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Okay, because right now it's a little bit uncomfortable. Like, I'm actually a teacher, and they moved me to another classroom, and because there was a lot of teachers that was leaving the job. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I wanted my old classroom. It was just so much changes. I'm a type of person, I don't like so much changes at once. You know, it bothers me.
Right.
So I was just a little concerned if I was going to, you know, finally adjust. Because I was planning on leaving anyway. Mm-hmm. But this kind of like pushed me more towards it. So, but I appreciate your advice.
Hang in there. It feel, I'm getting, hang in there.
Okay. Okay. And then my coworker that I'm working with, our working style, she's very much into it. Do you see that I will, because sometimes I feel like we kind of bump heads, but I bite my tongue. Do you feel that things will eventually go smoothly when we, while we work together within the 3 months I'm hanging in there?
You know, I feel that, you know, I'm looking into this and I do see her energy. She's overenthusiastic. She could run over the top of you, but not mean to run over the top of you. And so what I'm getting is that you need to speak up for yourself in just a very, like, concise way and let her know, you know, what you see in the situation and what your style is. And that way I feel that you could work things out here.
Okay.
It's not hopeless.
Okay. Thank you. I really appreciate it. I'll just hold on.
Okay.
I'll try to hold on.
Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Brenda. Great reading. The next caller is from Florida, and this is for Bobby.
Hello, Florida.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'd like to, I'm a mom, and I'm at home with my kids all the time. I appreciate it. So sometimes it's overwhelming for me. I'm a very creative person. My husband's a person in the world.
Okay. So right at the moment I said I could hear you, you started breaking up badly. So let's try it again and see if I can get the gist of what you're asking.
Okay, can you?
No, you're breaking up very bad. I don't know if it's my connection or yours.
No, it's my connection. Can you hear me now?
No, you're still really breaking up. Are you in the chat room by any chance?
Well, I think we're going to have to move on, Bobby. Yeah, maybe try and call us back later, and we'll try and take the call a little later. But we do
type out the question and comes back around.
Absolutely.
My husband's phone.
So, I'm sorry, we can't hear you. So maybe try calling back later.
She said she's going to call back. Is what she said.
Okay. All right, well, and then, Bobby, when she does call back, you can take the call. So, Maureen, we've got a call now from Texas. If you could take this one, please.
Sure. Hello, Texas. How are you? Hello, Texas. Big state. Texas, good food. Hello, Texas. Hello. Hello, Texas. Thinking about Texas. I think they're there. What do you guys see?
Come on, Texas. We want you.
4 days of drive through Texas back home to California. I'm in Texas. Where are you? One time I was. Oh, I heard some. Maybe they're not there.
No.
Hello?
Like, doesn't Texas. Look,
yeah. Texas doesn't want me. Sorry about that, Texas. Okay.
I'm sure we'll have another call for you.
Yes, I'm sure that will happen, of course.
So no you problem. Said it took 4 days to drive from Texas to California.
Depending on how – it is a long ways back. It's a long – never ending. Go check it out.
You guys drive a long, long way in America. I remember when I moved here, my grandmother came to stay and – I said, could you live here? And she said, well, I really like the weather, but it would really annoy me to have to drive 4 miles just for a piece of fish.
Well, you've gone on a road trip. It's a different story. Not San Diego. It's real close.
Yeah, I love San Diego. Maureen, we've got a question from chat, actually, from Apwin. And the question is, I'm thinking of starting my own business soon. Will it work out for me?
Okay, great direct question. Thank you so much. Aswin. Okay. All right. Let's see. This is what I'm getting. And I feel that you definitely are going to do much better beginning your own business, because I can see before that you were carrying a burden of everybody else's on your back. Also, I'm seeing another man here that didn't follow through. He's dependably undependable. Someone that would have I have money to help you or do whatever, didn't follow through, so you take it upon yourself. I do see stagnation ending. So moving forward is fantastic. You know, I also am getting that I know things have been kind of unfair, and it's almost like it has been, and I feel that it is. You probably have come to a point where you're not going to tolerate anything more. The unfairness is behind you, and also, you have gone through a spiritual death, which it's not physical, but the spiritual death is very positive. So you feel exhausted, but it's better than feeling like it was when you were carrying the burden for everybody else. I do see women around this and celebrating within the next 3 months, celebrating something really fantastic. And the fear of anything about a fear of poverty is just that. I don't feel that you need to worry. I am getting that you're going to be working very hard at this, but yes, I see much success. This is where you're exactly where you're supposed to be in your own business. Is now is the time for it. And putting out all the energy for somebody else's business, you know what, that you were able to do that. But there is another woman here I suggest being careful about. That looks like she's a little bit too overly emotional. But there are three total, you and there's two other women. Like I said, I feel really, there's a lot of support. It looks very good. You also may need to get some more insider knowledge about the business as time progresses. Like go and like learn something like a student, not in school, but it's fantastic. It's very good. Yeah. So I say yes, it's going to work out.
Thank you, Maureen. Great answer. Wonderful. Well, let's try Florida again for you, Bobby.
Okay. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi, I have my husband's phone now.
Let's try again. It's too bad because when you called the first time, all my psychic abilities were there and now they're not. So that's too bad. I'm teasing. No, of course.
Oh my God, that was quick.
I know. It happens. It comes in and out, you know. So what can I do for you? What would you like to talk about?
I want to know what number, like is there a particular number that you see around me or like a gift that you see me having? Because I'm a creative person and sometimes my energy is, you know, in different places or it's like I have, you know, a full burst and then that's it. It's like firecrackers and then it's over. So I want to know, like, as far as what you see me doing financially in the next 6 months or so, is there anything that pops out to you in particular?
Okay, so I'm trying to understand because you were still fading in and out just a little bit. It was better this time. But I'm not sure what you were asking in the beginning if I see a number around you. But were you talking about your creativity and how you kind of bounce out of, you know, something's really foremost in your mind or whatever, and you have a lot of spirit and energy towards it, but then it just kind of fades out and you move on towards something else?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you're asking the reason why you do that?
Like, I want to know what, like, because I'm a writer, but again, like, I can write about anything, you know? And so sometimes trying to get it, I want to publish a book. I want to put my book out there, and I want to travel, and I want to help people, you know, and I think it's going to come through my writing, but I'm a very intuitive person, and so sometimes it's hard for me living in the real world to know, because I want to know what I'm supposed to be doing, what's the timeline, like, how long is it going to take, you know?
Right, absolutely. And that can really trip us up, especially when you have such a spiritual being living in a human body. You know, there is a great quest, it seems like, for everybody wants to find out what they're supposed to be doing, like you said, and find their passion and get on the right path. And one of the questions I think that we often are asked is, am I on the right path? you know, and if I'm not, what do I need to do to get there, and that type of stuff. And from my viewpoint of all of this, and this all entails tuning into you as well, okay? I think you are, everybody's always on the right path as it is. In other words, you are following this inspiration. You want to write a book, you want to do this over here, you're trying to do this over there. All of this, really, I think the underlining tone is you getting in touch with your spiritual self. So your human mind is going a little crazy saying, I want to write a book, maybe I want to do this, I want to do Reiki, I want to do astrology, or just whatever these other thoughts. Those are just examples. And really, the underlining tone is just you want to be, like we talked about on the show, you want to be conscious, you want to be tapped in, tuned in, and turned on, right? All of these things that come to your mind, all of these examples, these pictures and images that come to your mind are ways for you to access that. So I wouldn't be too hard on yourself if you've got interest in one thing and then all of a sudden drop it and you've got another interest and then you drop that, almost like a spiritual ADD. And I would more so pay more attention and just go straight to the source, which is tapping into your intuitive abilities, meditation, consciously, just doing whatever it is that makes you feel tuned in. From there, all of these other things that have you scattered, no, I want to go this way, I want to go this way, I want to go that way, will calm down. It's like swimming in a pool. If you've ever been in a swimming pool where somebody has thrown a quarter and everybody's splashing around trying to get it, trying to get the quarter, I'm going to get the quarter first. But for this purpose of analogy, if you would just be calm, you can readily see the quarter, right, dropping, and then you know right where to reach out for it. So by calming and just going straight to the source, you won't be running around. You'll be inspired and you'll follow through. That's what you're wanting, is the follow through, because you're judging yourself on not being able to follow through. You have so many different ideas, but not following through on them. And that judgment will keep you stuck in a corner. So as best you can, don't judge what pictures and images, how you do this one moment and you don't do this on another. Just let yourself, allow yourself to have all those beautiful images, because they are what are doorways to help you move through and be more on your path. And then less of those frantic ones will come up and more deep, engaging, longer lasting ideas and inspirations will come up. Okay. So after going back and forth like that, you fell back onto the book part. I think that's perfect. And yes, you are tapped into your intuition enough where you're not going to have any problem channeling or writing through source. In other words, not you doing the writing, you kind of letting the writing do you. You see what I mean?
I have 100 pages like that already, and it's kind of like, what do I do now? You know, now what?
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Is this a book?
Right. You're just trying to find the way, because you want to be turned into source. It's like a high when you're tuned into that source, and when you come back down into your human body, it's tough. And then your mind starts at work, and your mind is the one that says, now what, and where should we go, and blah, blah, blah. That's all mind. When you're in source, it doesn't do that. So I would practice more being in source, tuned into that, because then more of the answers that you're looking for and directions to head will come from that. Do you see what I mean? That's the only thing with you. And this is more not so future-based a reading as it is helping you, your guides coming through, talking about what will help you be more tuned in, tapped in, be more feeling like you're on the path, not having to question yourself so much and not having to judge yourself because you seem so scattered and all over the place. Of course you are, because you're excited.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Am.
That's your type of personality. And it's so much better to be so excited about all these different inspirations that come up than to be in, say, apathy and just sitting on your couch going, nothing ever works. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think it's great.
A name for one of the books or any of my guys, because I, like, oftentimes I know that something is talking through me, because I'll write something and I'll read it and it's like, I didn't conceive of this. It just came through.
Right. And that is what I'm talking about. And we're going to have to wrap up here in just a second, but That's what I'm talking about. Don't assume that you're not on the right path or you're not being where you're supposed to be. You are. Now it's a matter of discerning messages. First, you have to get tuned in to hear messages. Then when you get the messages, now you have to discern the different messages. You're already at the discernment stage. You don't have to get tuned on. You're already there. So now just discern the inspirations, the excitedness, the messages that come through you or what you're writing down. Now just discern those. Don't worry about it being on the right path. Honey, you're far along the path. You're way well on your way on the yellow brick road. You don't have to start anything. See, that's one of the things we do. We falsely assume that we're not started yet, and you are. But I'm gonna have to stop now with you so we can get on to other callers. I know you've heard what I've said, and I think that's awesome. And again, don't assume anything. You're well on your way.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Great. Thank you, Bobby. Well, the next caller is from California, and I'll take this call. Who's calling us from California?
Hello?
Hello. What's your name?
Amber.
Amber, how are you?
Yeah, good.
How can we help, Amber?
So I just applied for like 5 different programs, and I'm so nervous, and I want to know if you think I'll get into one of them.
I feel you'll get into 2 or 3.
Really?
Yeah, you'll definitely have to make a choice.
Ooh. Okay.
I feel that you get in your own way, though, Amber. You feel unduly anxious about it.
Yeah, totally.
You know? You know deep down that you'll be just fine.
Yeah.
But you have this... The more important theme here, actually, according to my guides, Amber, is not so much the applications and the programs, because you'll be fine. As I said, you'll get 2... probably 3 offers, and you'll have to make a decision. That's great. You want to have the choice. But the more important underlying theme here is your self-doubt and the fact that you allow yourself to get anxious about things. And my guides are saying that that's what you need to address, because you are very capable. You're very smart. You've got a really sharp mind. And you're wonderful with people. You're applying for programs that are people related, aren't you?
No, more creative.
Creative. What did you apply
and
for?
Visual. Just for like art, like visual art programs.
Visual art. Well, I feel that you'll definitely be successful, but I do feel really strongly that in a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
8 years, maybe 9 years, mark my guide's words, you'll be working very closely with people. There's a really strong psychology theme around you.
I was just thinking about that today, actually. That's so funny you mentioned that.
Yeah, so you're not somebody that's just going to do one thing, Amber. You are very creative, you're very colourful, very artistic, and you're going down the right path. But you'll see that your path sort of splits and there are 2 paths side by side. I see you being very heavily involved in psychology and working with people in the longer term. And the other thing my guides are saying to you is you are extremely gifted with children. Children light up around you.
That's so funny. Interesting. Okay.
They, when children are around you, it's like someone switched on a Christmas tree and the lights all come on in the kids. So you've got
that's
a very
so funny,
important role to play.
And
you will
them.
See. You'll see that everything fits together for a reason. The color, the art and creativity that you bring, that you will offer, is one of the very creative ways that you'll switch those lights on in those kids. You'll see. Trust me.
Okay.
Yes, you'll get 2 offers, probably 3. You'll need to make a decision. Stop worrying about money. You're very worried about finances.
Yeah.
My guides say let go of the anxiety.
Okay.
And the problem will just dissolve. And The other thing I'm going to say to you is, I know this wasn't your question, there's a wonderful relationship for you. Really wonderful. You've had a terrible relationship. You've had a terrible relationship. And you're going to have the biggest contrast in relationships you could ever imagine. You're going from the worst experience to the best experience. Okay?
That's so sweet. Wonderful.
And one quick thing for you to look up. Barbara and Elizabeth, members of your family on your mother's side in spirit, are watching over you. Okay?
Okay. Wow, thanks.
You're welcome. Good luck. Take care.
Yep. Bye.
Okay, we've got a question from chat for you, Brenda. It's from Nutty Butty. And the question is, okay, well, I'm an unsigned singer stroke songwriter that has had my share of ups and downs. Can you tell me what you see? Oh, it's just scrolled up. As far as how long or when I'll have a good outlook. I feel like when I do something or something happens, it happens all at once, whether in love, music, or whatnot. An American
okay.
So the question, summary, the question is, what's the outlook for Nutty Butty, who is an unsigned singer-songwriter?
Well, it's so interesting because the very first thing that I'm picking up is love. So it feels that, you know, when I'm looking into it, love has had a way of derailing some of your creative projects. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It just looks like when you get going with an inspiration, a song, you're doing your music, and then love comes in and kind of blows you out of the water. So now more than ever, you have to view this, you know, have to view the situation with balance. And a relationship coming back into your life may not be the best relationship for you. It feels like it could cause some chaos, whereas if you stick to your plan, because I see an awful lot of creative energy around you right now, and I feel that in the next 4 months, there are some things up in the air for you that if you really focused on them, you could get them where they need to be for success. And there is a man who I feel you could collaborate with. And this person that you could collaborate with, he has light-colored hair. It's either blonde or kind of reddish. There's a particular, but it's about getting focused again. And there's a particular way in which I see you getting your music out. And it doesn't look like live gigs. This looks like creating the songs, putting them on CD, using some creative avenues to build an audience around it. You could have a little luck with that. I mean, it feels like it's your time, but it's interesting because right when you get this momentum, whoops, this person from the past comes back in who I feel is a chaotic energy. So it feels like you have to make a choice between your music and love at this point because, you know, the peaks in this success for your creativity, you're heading towards one right now in the next 4 months. So there you go.
Thank you very much, Brenda. That's great. Well, Bobby, call for you, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Hi, Pennsylvania. Are you there?
Hello, Bobby.
Hi, who's this?
This is Penny.
Terry?
Penny.
Oh, Penny. No, it's not. Don't tease me now. Who is this really?
Okay.
I love it. Hi.
You exist. You do exist.
You exist. No, it's true. It's really true.
My divorce got delayed again.
Okay.
And it's a 5-year divorce. My concern is with my daughter and a settlement, and whether I should take back my family farm or not.
Okay.
I know it's for two questions.
No, that's all right. I don't understand the first question. I guess I just kind of heard the second question. So let's start with that first, because generally we only have time for the one. But Your concern is, you said the family farm, whether you should take that back or not, correct?
Right.
How does it make you feel when you think about taking it back? You've already let it go to a degree. And so I think there would be enough shift in your feelings, if I can point you to that, to feel what it feels like if you thought about taking it back. I'm not saying would you take it back, because you're the kind of person that would do what you had to do. I would make it work. I would do that. You know what I mean? You're a can-do person. So I'm talking about a different type of feeling of if you got it back. How does that make you feel?
Originally, it was like, because it was my family, it's been in my family for so long, I had to have it, had to have it. And that was actually what kept me there for the 10 years of abuse was, right. And then I realized that I'm putting the value of a home above my well-being.
Right.
Which is what made me be able to leave.
Exactly. And here comes the but. Go ahead.
And now that it's at the point where, and he's trashed it. Every room is full of cat shit and garbage. It's going to take so much to repair it.
Right.
Do I take advantage of the market and take the money back? I guess I'm asking, is, are my parents going to be really upset if I let this? This is the only thing left in our family. That's the string.
Right. So you're pretty in touch with your feelings about how you would feel if you got it back. And
I'm stuck with the old neighbors. I'm stuck with everything old that I've lived with all my life.
No, I understand. So you're in tune with that, and that's good. And you're not meant to have the farm. Shortcut. Okay, you're not meant to have that. You know that. You said you were putting it above your own well-being and such, and you're absolutely right about that. And I still think that you... If you were to get it back only for the purpose of fixing it up and getting rid of it again, to give it into somebody's hands that would take care of it, I would totally support that. But the thing is, what I would recommend that you try to let go of is thinking that your parents might be mad. I have seen more times than not people from the other side come through and say, look, yes, I built that house. Yes, I put blood, sweat, and tears into it. However, it's killing you, and that's not what I want. You need to get rid of it. Don't keep it for me. You know what I mean? And then I've seen them work in amazing ways to help you get rid of it. So they are not mad on the other side. That was during their time. They built, they struggled. That was their, as we talked about destiny earlier, that was their thing. It's not yours.
Right. I did have a dream at one point in time. Well, I mean, it's still sort of a dream of turning it into this creative barn, taking the barn and turning it creative. But it's going to, realistically, it's going to be so much.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. Only because it's a dream, and I think the dream was a bit of a projection. In other words, your positive self and what to do in life and how to take care of yourself got projected onto some of the guilt you were feeling for letting the place go. And so you're thinking, if I could combine my positivity and this barn, and maybe then I could still keep it and I could turn it into something that is me, because it's not me right now. Do you see what I mean?
Right.
So I think you were just doing that. And that's all. I don't believe that was something prophetic or a message from your guides to say, you need to get that barn back and turn it into that. I think it was just nothing more than you just trying to make the best out of a situation and adding your own stuff to it. That's all.
Right.
So, so you have a choice of either getting it back, like you said, taking part of the market, cleaning up, and giving it away again, though, or just leaving it. I kind of like the idea of fixing it up, because this guy is no good that's tearing it up and such. You know, it's a shame. I feel the land and the farm is hurting because of that, if that makes sense. I mean, I can feel that space, and it's no good. So if you had the means to take it back and go, you know, just you get out of here. I'll take this back here for a second. And then you clean it up, you fix it up, right? Dust it off, and then put it into somebody else's hands who you know will take care of it. I really like that. In other words, when I feel that strongly about it, that's my guides and angels pushing me in that direction to offer that to you. You see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so, and I also feel like he's holding on to that farm as a way of keeping a hold of my daughter.
Yes. Absolutely. That's why you feel it. Now, we're going to have to wrap up, but that's why you're feeling that. You're absolutely correct on that. Absolutely. His intentions are no good, and your intuition is right on with that. So,
and again, I have to almost bite off my face to save my daughter. I have to take that back to break the bond between the two of them, so she is out from underneath his magic, his influence.
Well, that's a whole nother subject, ain't it?
Yeah, I know. I know. But, I mean, he's using the farm. He that's her safe scope, and she goes there regardless of how bad it is. She goes there. And she can't see it.
Exactly. All right, sweetie, I got to let you go, but...
Yep. All right, thank you, Bobby. Bye-bye.
Back, and I have utmost faith. You're right. Doing well. You're thinking in the right direction.
Great. Well, thank you, Bobby. Okay, Maureen, we've got a question for you from chat, and then I'll take a question from chat, but yours is from Trisha. The question is it best for me to break up with my boyfriend, Ben, and when is the right time to bring it up?
Okay, well, it sounds to me like maybe you've already kind of made the decision.
That's what I
to
thought.
Do this.
Decision's made.
Yeah, because, you know, the way the question's answered, let me tell you what I'm seeing overall. And the thing is, there's a sense of family dishonor going on here in recent past. I don't know what this pertains to his family or whatever. There's certainly some issues here. And I do see a man surrounding you that's – he looks more mature. I'm not saying he – maybe he is older, but he looks more mature. And he's more together, solid grounded, let's put it that way, and more successful maybe. Ben appears to me to be – and like I said, it sounds to me like you made a decision, but he does appear to me a bit out of control and narrow-minded. And he's usually very charming, which he probably still is, but he's downright ornery. So I do feel that you two have some major issues going on. I also am feeling that there's something connected with work between you two. But really, when it comes down to this, I don't know what to say when's the right time. When is the right time to break it off? But if you have interest otherwise, and there is some temptation I see around you, maybe for somebody else, I would be careful. Maybe take things slower in every which way. If there's somebody that you might be seeing as interesting, take it easy, even though I can see there's some trouble with Ben. But if there's somebody else around that might be tempting at this time, you know, sometimes that can end up really being a mess for you. And I'm saying this with all good intentions. So I don't know what to say about when's the right time. But like, I feel that you need to do what you need to do. But just be very aware of other people. You know, may not, there's someone new, it's just I see temptation. Be very careful. Temptation could really drag you down. And at the same time, detach from Ben. You know, he does need to step it up and turn himself back around to a better, higher vibration. Okay? I hope that helped. Hello?
Thank you, Maureen.
Okay. You're welcome.
Sorry, I was taking myself off mute for the last question, and this one's for me. This is Magdalene in chat. She's a medical assistant, and that's what she's studying. And she wants to know if she'll get a job as a medical assistant in May, and the answer is absolutely yes. I feel that it will be 12 to 14 days into May. So by the middle of May, yes. And one of the very strong messages that my guides gave is that when you do God's work, good things happen. You know, you're going into a field of work that is extremely important, helping people to take care of their health and well-being. It's critical. And it's wonderful work to do, and spirit support you in getting the opportunity that you need. So as I said, by the middle of May, I wish you lots of luck. Sounds really exciting. Well, everybody, that brings us to the end of another great show. I want to thank Doug. I know that nobody ever hears Doug, but he's the one that keeps us on track behind the scenes, and he makes sure that everything runs smoothly. I want to thank Jessica again for taking the time to be with us. I found it fascinating. That's a show I'll listen to a number of times. And thank you to my wonderful co-hosts, Maureen.
Good night. Thank you. Bless your heart.
Oh, actually, one thing before you do go, I forgot to ask. Oh, I forgot to ask what's for next week. And I know. And we've got a fantastic show next week. A wonderful story that involves John of God and transmediumship, channeling, and it's also a wonderful love story. So please do join us. It'll be Valentine's Day. Another really interesting show, as I said, with a great love story as well. So do join us. Brenda?
Goodbye, everybody.
And Bobby?
Bye.
Goodbye. Well, everyone have a wonderful weekend. Join us again, same time next week, as always, Thursday, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. And we will see you soon, or speak to you soon.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.